I call the March 14th, 2023 Committee of the Whole Meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Great, it's 7:02. Member Bourne? Member Covey?
Here.
Member Schneider?
Here.
Member Spain?
Here.
Chair Brooks?
Here. Okay, sweetheart, okay. We will move directly to discussion on landscape maintenance labor services bid. Lisa Shepherd and Kyle Coos will present the information.
Great, we're gonna invite Kyle on up to the podium and his presentation, and we will go through the reason why we're doing this bid.
So tonight I'll be walking through three different bid openings for projects and services that we've had here since our last board meeting. The way I'm just gonna kind of go through each one, first will be the landscape maintenance labor contract, followed by the Lakefront Park tennis and playground project, and then finally the curveball project. So I'll kind of go project by project and then have discussions at the end of each section before moving on to the next. So the first project, or in this case the service, is our landscape maintenance labor contract. So this contract was last bid and awarded in 2018. Previously, the contract also included mowing services for portions of our parks, as well as some village sites under our shared services agreement. Over the previous mowing season, we evaluated both the cost and quality of the mowing portions of this contract and determined a better operational and financial approach was to hire a full-time position and resume mowing duties in-house. The horticultural landscape budget was reduced to reflect this, and the labor portion was bid as a standalone item. This labor portion falls under the direction of the park's operation manager, doing primarily jobs like weeding, mulching, planting, things of that nature. The labor is a reliable, trained resource for us to utilize as needed, as that demands the park to strip ebb and flow throughout the year. About $205,000 was budgeted for the mowing and labor contract last year, $90,000 of which was mowing, $115,000 for labor. That portion that's now falling under the full-time mowing position was removed from the budget for fiscal year 24. So it's just kind of high level of the labor contract and the services that we use it for. So moving on to the bid discussion and the results. We have three bids received for the landscape maintenance labor. Flex was the lowest bidder at $44.40. Flex is a company that has worked with us in the past. We're conducting reference checks with Arlington Heights, Mount Prospect, and Northfield. And the comparison to 2022's labor rate with the Lou is $45 an hour. We think that this is the right opportunity to get a fresh group of laborers from a different company. Lou was fine for the years as we held their contract, but there seemed to be a level of maybe complacency that developed recently, and going to a new contractor to kind of see what kind of services they can provide, compare that against the Lou for a year. So that's kind of the summary of the landscape maintenance labor and the bid results. Any questions on that? Clarifications?
What does the mower do in the off season?
Good question.
So as normal, we have custodial needs throughout the district. One item that was written into the full-time labor and mower crew leader position was custodial duties to be assigned potentially in the off-season. Mm-hmm. They would definitely supplement learning all the other grounds work that we do, ball fields, mm-hmm. Soccer fields, baseball fields, all the beach operations, lending support for other small projects and working within the facility.
And you found someone?
Yes, we actually just got a formal offer accepted yesterday, so we're excited. Pending background check and physical, that will happen on board hopefully in early April, right in time for mowing to kick up. Lots of experience from this individual, has lots of experience in landscape maintenance and mowing, so we're excited and hopeful that it'll be on board.
Do we have to get another more mowers?
No, there will be no initial capital investment because we have all the equipment we need. We already cut a large segment of our parks, so there will be no need for any mower.
Great.
Truck trailer purchases initially.
Approximately how many contractors see our RFP?
So we had, I believe in this case, there was 6 or 7 people picked up, and then we had the 3 bids submitted.
And
so
it was
a publicly bid.
Okay, so it's announced publicly somewhere that they will see.
Correct.
So it was released in the Glencoe News, and then we sent it as well to several contractors to try to solicit
This is where you read this part.
Oh. Is there a consensus? Any other questions regarding this? Okay, is there a consent? Yeah. Yeah, there is, sorry.
We don't have any benefit working with the village on this at all.
So
we do.
Cutting the grass, yeah. We do, that's part of our shared service.
Yeah.
Okay. And so in turn, they take care of our fleet.
Right. They take care of our fleet, which was a very expensive bill this week, actually, not at all. But yep. So we bill them for the lawn, and they bill us for the fleet.
So we are cutting of their grass is offset by their labor for our fleet maintenance. We do pay for parts.
And the village is and the village is also looking at flex for their like pulling the weeds and things like that.
We don't pull their weeds.
We do not pull the weeds, just mow the grasses.
And it's those,
so the islands and stuff, they take care of those themselves.
So I will say that I think that shared service agreement is very beneficial for us to cut those spaces and in return get mechanic labor.
Right. And these areas are so contiguous that if the guys are out there or the gals are out there mowing the parks, they're kind of just moving over a little bit and doing some of the village areas, right?
Just kind of a scale. Yeah.
Small community, travel time to get them.
Right, right. Okay. So, anything else?
Yeah, one more. So, and the 4440 then is within our budget.
I love this.
Yeah, so we budgeted $112,000 for the work. So the number of hours we can use the labor for would be based off of 4440, which I think amounted to 16 5-day, 8 hours per day, 5 days a week, weeks. But obviously, we'll start them up and rev them up and scale them back based off of the time of the year, the needs of the district, special events, lead up to 4th of July. So the budget is a dollar amount of the labor rate. Yeah. It determines how many hours we will be able to use them for to reach that.
So we won't exceed $116,000.
Right.
And that'll be based on the 4440 an hour.
Got it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now this is for another question.
That's good.
You didn't expect
Now, does weather affect how many weeks of the year that the service is needed? Like, I would think that, let's say this is a warm spring, we would need services earlier in the year, or like early winter versus delayed winter. So there's like a variation in number of weeks we need maintenance. Like, so is that potential?
The nice way that the contract or the bid was written and the contract would be is that we can basically request the laborers to come for 3 days a week, 5 days a week, not come for 2 weeks, take a month off, all dependent if we're at a drought portion in August and we don't need any weeds pulled and there's no major special events, we could scale them back to 1 or 2 days a week. And then when leaf cleanup comes in November, we can rev them up to 4 days a week. So it's kind of an ability to utilize that labor as we need it.
Okay. Good. I was just thinking with climate change, there's all these articles out there about leaves on the trees coming earlier than usual.
Yeah.
I'm noticing myself, and I was just thinking, like, are we going to have to start budgeting for extra?
We won't use extra. We'll just change around the time that they'll come. So that's why this is nice, because it gives us flexibility.
Yeah.
We're not tied to something. You know, you've seen contracts before where you're tied to, like, mowing in August three times a week, and you don't really
need
it at all.
Every week, whether you need it or not.
Yeah.
Right. When there's a drought.
Yeah.
Right. Right,
so
because for our homes, they come weekly no matter what.
Yep.
All of
us. And so we don't do,
That's
it's a set contract for the year.
Yeah. That's it. They won't not come. So that is good. Stephanie, do you have any lawn maintenance questions for us this evening? No, you're all good?
You're good.
Okay, then I will ask, is there a consensus to advance the landscape maintenance labor services bid for approval at the March 21st board meeting? Stephanie, yes. Carol?
Yes.
Michael? And Bart?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Then yes, Lisa, you have your answer. We will move to our discussion on Lakefront Park tennis court and playground bids. Again, Kyle, with help from Lisa, will present the information.
All right. So next we have the Lakefront Park Tennis Court Playground Renovation Bid Results. Before we jump into the bid results, just a quick refresher of this project. It is the tennis court playground replacements, as well as new pathway and site amenities like swing benches, game tables, etc. There's two singles, one doubles layout, and an alternative play, non-style playground. The timeline we're looking at for this project is starting in early April and completion before 4th of July. We did order the long lead time items that were approved at the January board meeting, those being the turf, artificial turf, the mounds, and some select playground amenities to kind of get that ball rolling and get those items in our hands as quickly as possible. One item of note just with this project is one of the challenges is the tennis court, I think as we all know, resides above the filled water tank. So there are restrictions put in place for the weight and means by which equipment can be used on top of that water storage tank. Before we jump into the bids, want to just talk through the alternates involved in this project. So there's the base bid would be for a mill and resurface of the tennis court, which is essentially removing the top 2 inches and then resurfacing with a thinner layer of asphalt. That would be the cheapest option. Alternate number one is a full replacement, so the tear off and removal of all the existing asphalt, and then replacement with new asphalt of, I believe it's 4 inches. Alternate number two is for irrigation. Staff, we are not recommending accepting of alternate number two. The price came back somewhere in the range of $50,000 to $100,000. We specified plants for this project that were perennials that were drought resistant, and we don't see the value in installing irrigation for plants that, after a couple of years should be pretty well established. We do go there to water our annual flowers anyways, so for the first 2 years and for any serious drought situation, we would be there anyways with our water wagon. And alternate number three is a small alternate. There will be a new trench drain being installed on the west end of the courts. The way that trench drain gets tied into the larger storm basin, there's a little discrepancy on the elevation and the ability to core through. So if we cannot core through that basin, they have to reroute the pipe outside of the tennis court footprint and into a different structure. So as we walk through the bid breakdown, just keep in mind that we don't know yet if we'll have to accept alternates one and alternates three. That'll be determined as soon as we are able to fully kind of see what the surface looks like once the carpet's removed. So let's take a look at the bid results. You can see we have three tables. Table number one at the top is just the base bid breakdown. This would assume that milling and resurfacing is appropriate and that the drain outlet does not need to be rerouted. That base bid from Hacienda is $435,725. Table number two, which is ultimately what we're going to be recommending, is the Hacienda contract cost if we were to need to replace, remove and replace all the asphalt as well as rerouting the drain outlet. And table number three shows our recommended not to exceed amount for the advancement of the project at the March board meeting. And so you can see here under table number two, the likely scenario that we're recommending from Hacienda is to have not to exceed amount under the contract portion of their base bid, $435,000, $106,000 alternate if we do have to remove and replace all the asphalt, and an additional $9,600 if we do have to reroute that pipe drain. So the Hacienda contract total would be $551,984. A contingency of $55,198. The owner items at a value of $161,878 have already been purchased. Bringing our total construction cost, the way we recommend is a not to exceed number of $769,000. The project budget was $905,000. So I think first of all, do the alternates make sense in the way that we're looking at them and asking for not to exceed budget, so we find out if they do in fact need to be accepted.
Why are the alternates different costs though?
They're just bid out.
Because they're different. So one is totally taking out everything from the tennis courts, and then the other one is...
Oh, no, I get that.
Oh.
Why is each vendor in
cost? That's how they bid it.
So they each will assign whatever value they put on that amount of work. So one contractor might think that removing costs $74,000 additional versus milling, and the third contractor thought it was $65,000 more. So they all have their different values that they assign to the line items in the budget, and the alternates can vary based on that contract.
It's fortunate that the base bids, the lowest base bid is also the lowest total,
yes.
Because if that weren't the case, we would have a conundrum.
We have Hacienda base bid with Innovations alternate one and Great Lakes alternate three, right?
Yeah.
It's not the way the world is working.
No.
No. You have to pick one better.
Why their alternate one was high? I mean, are you allowed to ask that often?
We did not have that specific conversation, but again, you know, each contractor might look at removing 8 inches of asphalt compared to milling two is a different amount of labor hours. So it's likely that their calculus just had that as a higher value. Again, I think regardless of if we have to accept alternate one or alternate one and three, mm-hmm. or we take the base bid, Hacienda still remains the lowest in all those scenarios.
So sometimes they do a higher base bid. Obviously, that's what Great Lakes and Innovation did, and then made their second one because they probably figured out they're already mobilized and everything like that, so they're going to give a lower value to that.
And so it is so probably worth noting that we didn't have time to update the slides, but in the formal recommendation, that alternate is actually going to go down a little bit because Hitchcock did catch a slight inconsistency in the numbers. I don't have that exact number in front of me, but it does come down a little bit just as a
but not 74.
No.
But yeah, regardless, when you look and accept the bid package, it has to be for the whole package. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And because we took out alternate two immediately, that's how we threw out the winner.
Okay, any questions for Kyle?
So there's apparently a weight limit over the on the tennis course, and they have equipment that's way below that weight limit if they have to strip off.
Yes, so we had a conversation today with the sub for Hacienda for asphalt and the Hitchcock, and they understood the village requirements for essentially skid steer or smaller size equipment and no trucks driving on there. And they explained that that wouldn't be a problem. They intend to use two skid steers with a milling attachment. If they're milling and if they're removing, it'd be a skid steer with a bucket. Trucks will stay on the outside of the tennis court.
Yeah, they're required to explain the whole process to us and then to the village. So.
Mm-hmm.
We were satisfied with that's Hacienda's subcontractor, and we were satisfied with them.
How far below the surface is that tank? Do you know, Kyle?
The tank, I don't know the exact numbers. I think it is 6 inches of stone and 8 inches of asphalt. So I think it's about 14 inches from the surface.
So it's close.
And we actually put eyes on the top of that tank when we did a little exploratory for the village and this project. So
interesting.
It probably varies in different areas of the court for the 18 inches.
Wow, that is close. Any other questions for Kyle about this? Bart, do you have anything? Carol? Good.
We're Michael? Excited to get started, and they're excited they get started.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
It's
really, so it's going to be so cool to have it there.
Little thing. Okay.
Okay, so in a similar fashion, is there a consensus to advance the Lakefront Park tennis court and playground bids for approval at the March 21st board meeting? Stephanie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Bart?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Okay, very good, Lisa. We'll move now to the discussion on the Lakefront Bluff Stabilization and Access Road Improvements Project. Again, Kyle will present the information.
Thank you. We all know this project originally is the Crib Wall Project. Because the scope has grown given the grant applications. It is now the Lakefront Bluff Stabilization and Access Road Improvement Project. Before we jump in, just wanted to cover a couple things. So the contract will be held by the Village of Glencoe, primarily because of their $700,000 DCEO grant, and the Park District would cost share 50% of that, that value. And just a refresher on the project scope, so starting with the Crib Wall portion is the yellow line just west of the green line, which is the ramp. That Crib Wall is the portion of the work that is covered by the DCEO grant. That is the existing Crib Wall that we're all familiar with that's crumbling, looks like parking blocks, Lincoln log together. That's being completely removed and replaced with a soldier pile and sheet lagging concrete stamped facing. Just to the right or the east of that Crib Wall is the asphalt ramp, curbing and gutter work that would be getting replaced essentially from the halfway house down to the water plant gate and then around the curve towards the beach landing. East to the right of the green line, east of that is the new retaining wall that will be getting installed on the downslope of the bluff that will support the roadway from below. And then up at the top at the Hazel turnaround, or the Hazel ramp access is drainage work. This will essentially be the path being raised by 3 inches to stop water that sheet drains towards the bluff. and an installation of storm structures in front of that path to capture that water and divert it into the storm system. There will also be a large trench drain installed at the very top of the ramp access near Hazel to capture any water coming down that ramp and again divert it into the storm system. So before we go any further on construction schedule, anybody need clarifications on the project scope as it stands right now?
One question on the drainage. Does the drainage water, when it goes in the storm system, does it then go directly into the lake, or?
There's an outfall. I don't know exactly where their outfall is located. It's not the ones on our beach. I think it goes south, somewhere south, but I'm not 100% sure. It's not on discharging onto our beach.
Okay, good. Okay, good. So no changes in drainage result in water going across our bathing beach.
Yeah. I'd have to confirm exactly where that section, different sections of the storm water system discharge in different areas. We have one that's on like our north beach. Uh-huh. That's a different part of the system. So all good on scope?
Yeah, I guess that brings up a question of our, the one that does drain on the north beach.
We're gonna come to that.
You are gonna come to that?
Yeah.
Because I would love to know.
Oh, I don't know if that's a possibility. Well, we'll come to that project they're doing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll touch on that here. So all good on scope of the unit? Okay. All right, so before we get to the bid results, just talking through construction schedule. So in a meeting with the engineering team and prospective contractors at the pre-bid walkthrough, it did become very apparent that attempting to complete this project in a single phase would be extremely disruptive to beach operations and really just not practical given beach season being right in the middle of summer there. So with that, all three parties agreed that the best approach would be to take on a phased approach to the project, essentially splitting the project into a phase one to be completed before Memorial Day and phase two to be completed after Labor Day. So you can see in the table here, phase one is proposed to be early to mid-April through May 26th, which is just before beach opening. This would be just the crib wall. The crib wall again being west of the ramp, the one we're all familiar with. The public access restrictions during this time would be ramp closures during construction hours. Stair access would be maintained to the beach at all times, and the ramp would be open after construction hours and on weekends. After that portion of the work is complete before Memorial Day, significant construction work would halt. During our beach season, there would be no substantial work. Any ancillary work would be really contained to off the curb towards the wall that was installed, and no restrictions would be placed on the ramp access. And then after beach season, after Labor Day, phase two of the project, the east retaining wall, again, the downslope retaining wall, the asphalt work, the curbing, and the drainage work would take place. That is anticipated to go until middle to end of November. And again, very similar restrictions placed on the phase two portion. The only difference being at certain times when the asphalt is completely torn up, that ramp could be closed after construction hours and on weekends if it's unsafe for people and vehicles to walk down that. So we don't think that's gonna be for super extended periods of time, but you know, if the road is completely ripped up and it's exposed aggregate, and it's not safe to have people walking down there, it would have to be closed. The phased approach is really to minimize disruptions to our beach operations. It's also intimately tied to the DCO grant that needs, the work needs to be completed before June 30th. It's a complex project, very limited access and egress to the work sites, and very large equipment needed to complete that work. So before we jump onto the bid end of things, just wanted to talk through the construction schedule. And
I'm the only one that's, I mean, it's 2023, everything takes longer, everything's more expensive. Am I the only one that's concerned about really phase one not being done by May 26th?
So we do have liquidated damages put into the contract if they don't complete the work by that set date. We've been given assurances through the engineer talking to their suppliers or contractors and their suppliers that by issuing that intent to award letter, that they would be able to get the soldier piles, the steel soldier piles ordered early enough to get that work done. That would really be the one thing that would hold things up, would be the delivery of those soldier piles. And the information we were given is that those soldier piles should be able to be ordered early enough to be in production and on site.
So that deadline, the DCEO deadline, is at 24 or 25?
So the DCEO deadline is June 30th, but the
23.
So
it couldn't be. It can't be delayed till fall.
That's, right. You know, if we couldn't push this till after because there's $700,000 on the table that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not great.
And only half phase one.
That's for phase one. Yes. Yeah.
And what does the world look like if they take a week longer? And there's some in this demand out there. Like, does the world look like, hey, you can go down part of the ramp, part of the stairs, or
you can go down the stairs the whole time?
Yeah, but what about ADA stuff?
Right. I mean, that's our problem. So that's why, and if it doesn't. If it's not done by May 26th, then they'll have to know that they have to keep the ramp open for access.
And that's in the contract?
Yeah. It was put very clearly into the addendum that was issued after our pre-construction meeting that this phase approach has hard deadlines.
What's the overall beach experience going to be like this summer? Like, I know we have to do these things, and we have to do them during the nice weather part of the year and everything. But I'm just thinking, like, is the experience going to just be a lot of
banging?
Construction fence, noise.
Not from Labor Memorial Day to Labor Day. Before that, yes, it'll be noisy. After that, yes, it'll be noisy.
What about the tennis courts and all
that? That we hope to get done by July 4th, so there will be noise, but we think the tennis courts will be done even before the beach season opens, weather permitting.
Yeah, but we think that based on our conversations with the contractor today that it's very likely that the asphalt work can get done well in advance of the beach season if the playground lead time items, which potentially could linger. So we're going to go backing up to that project. We're going to do everything we can to reduce the construction fence footprint and hopefully get it to a point where if we're still waiting on playground stuff, but the path work and the courts are done, that fence now just essentially encompasses the playground footprint. And to Lisa's point, in regards to the crib wall portion, you know, all these efforts are to make sure that during the beach season, we're not dealing with major construction noise, dirt, dust, and debris. But
you can't really get around the potential risk that they don't get it done on time, because you can't say, well, we're not comfortable this year, we'll try to get comfortable next year. You always have the same constraint.
Right.
You want to access the beach in the summer, and something could happen. I like the idea that the village and the park district work in this. I like the fact you've got an oversight team. I mean, it seems like a leap of faith you have to take, and the longer you wait, the less our money's worth with high inflation, so the price goes up.
And we're concerned about the buff stability, so this work has to be done. It's becoming more and more concerned every year or so. I thought the phase in approach was ideal, because at first when we heard we had to close off the road, we're like, this is not going to work. So we're very happy it worked in two phases, and that way the project will be able to get done this year.
And vehicles are going to have to get to and from the water plants, so that would indicate in the off season when we no longer had the golf cart, if a patron would have to be driven down, which is our concern, correct? Much like the water plant, there'd have to be some sort of access.
Only
if it goes,
there might be a couple days that the water plant people can't get down.
Got it.
They'll have to walk their stuff down, and ADA won't be able to get down. But then it turns into the beach is more a park situation. It's not so construction. That is as long as it's not a prolonged inability for ADA to get down there. That is
acceptable.
What about an emergency? Like, do we ever have ambulances go down there?
Yes, we do. And at that point, if we do have an emergency, they'll have to go down the stairs if the road is closed off, but that's off season.
So then there was a discussion at that pre-construction meeting. There's an understanding by all parties that if there is an emergency, it doesn't matter what equipment is out there, it could be the rigging machine that's drilling the aisles, they would have to move out of the way. It doesn't matter what they're doing, which is obviously different than me saying I have to get down there to deliver a garbage can or something.
Right.
Like that.
So
yeah, I was wondering if there's like a liability component, you know, like what if something happens? And
there we still have, even if they can't, say if they can't get the ambulance fast enough, they can stop at the halfway house, take their stretcher and go down the stairs, that's just true. Like they do for any other emergency with stairs. So
the boathouse is the same issue.
Same issue right there.
The boathouse.
They can never get an ambulance
the
there, so they always
has
have
that
to.
Issue. Right.
Yeah.
Although the stairs certainly are an improvement.
Pardon me?
It's grandfathered.
Yeah, correct. They would just have to stretcher it over there.
Related to the ADA, because we're able to offer the same service
on the other side. Yeah.
Okay, Kyle.
Well, this is exciting work. I do hope that it's done. It's big. I think we've been talking.
We just have to have we have to have faith, and we.
I think we've talked about all of my first board meeting 4+ years ago. So
Yeah, I agree.
Take off the list.
Do you want to go to the bid?
And in some ways, it's nice. It's getting all done at the same time, so it's only like one summer of disruption.
I agree.
So it'll be
I agree. So if we did this 2 summers in a row, it would be more of a drag.
Yeah.
You know.
We're going to be here this summer because everyone's traveling. So it's
on United.
It's ridiculous.
Okay.
So moving on to the bid results. So we received 2 bids. I believe there was 5 bid packages picked up. Arts and Construction, Alliance Construction were the 5 bids. Arts had the low bid of $1.74 million. Kind of just walking through the project cost, the Martin bid of $1,747,000, a contingency of about $30,000, construction management portion of $106,000, brings the total project cost of $1,884,000. So that middle table shows our total project construction costs. The cost share table at the bottom breaks down after the 2 grants. So first we have the $700,000 DCEO grant held by the village, our $80,000 voting access area development grant held by the park district, and then the 50-50 split between the park district and the village. Our budget for this project assuming was $552,000, so we're right on budget with where the cost share is landing. Any questions about the bid results? I got a few more additional information items. So just Martin, in case anyone doesn't remember, they did the work on the pier project as well as the North Overlook and the Boating Beach stairs. And they also are the apparent low bidder for the Village Glencoe stormwater outfall project that Commissioner Covey referenced on the Boating Beach. We have a familiarity with them as a company. We've been happy with the end result of their projects. They've been responsive as issues arise and lines. In my experience in the peer project, we're always open with their construction manager. The CBEL construction management proposal is for pre-construction services, construction management, and coordinating assistance. The main portion of that is essentially a full-time on-site construction manager, engineer overseeing the project 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. That's the bulk of that $106,000 value. With that, any questions, comments, concerns about bid results, anything else to discuss?
No issues with these guys and other projects? We love them. I know the stairs are very nice with Josh's bench. Everything looks, no issues with these?
No, we liked them. They did a great job on the peer project, and I know a lot of park districts that use them, and they're really happy with them.
And that was a challenging project as well.
Yeah, it's a very challenging project.
And there is a value, I think, to have them having an understanding of what each operations look like. They know the site.
Yeah.
They know what operations are. But
people coming down, and
I think if you have alleviated my main concern of ensuring access during a short window that we get to use the building. My hunch is that it's also going to be pretty cold around the world that we get. It's either going to be pretty cold or really hot.
Yeah, that's usually how it is, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them about the stormwater project really quick?
The stormwater project, the one that Martin was awarded through the village, so that stormwater outfall that currently sits on the northern middle third of the Boating Beach is essentially going to be backed up and rerouted behind the boat storage racks over to the north groin wall, and then run along that wall out to the beach with some riprap stones put at its discharge point. So that project should be kicking off from the village standpoint pretty soon here, I think in early April. And then hopefully we'll have that pipe rerouted off of the middle of our beach and not impact the beach. So
where's it going to be rerouted to?
So It comes, right? There's, yeah, so it basically right now has, it comes almost straight down and out in the current position. They're basically gonna cut it, cap it, and then turn it north over to that groin wall, the north end of the property, and then run it along that driveway.
Where those rocks are?
Yes. So basically, its discharge point is now gonna be at the very, very north end of the Bodie Beach along.
A lot there.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the contractor will also regrade the beach at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Parker contract. It's that big crevice that's there.
That was a real, it was a big flashpoint for people. They really, when it had to be in an emergency situation, as I understand it, put where it currently is, that created a lot of consternation. So I'm really happy to hear that they're doing that. That's great.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. is there a consensus to advance? If there are no more questions, so any more questions about this?
Just really quick, you should have all gotten that IGA I emailed you, so hearing if you have any questions.
Yeah.
I have a question that's a little off that you may not know the answer to. But where's the intake for the water treatment plant? Because I was thinking like, okay, so we've got storm water draining, we've got a water plant over there. Are we draining water and then re-drinking it? What gets clean?
I think it's like a mile offshore. Mm-hmm. It's a front.
Yeah, it's
it is.
Dead center.
Yeah, it's pretty far.
So you know where the area where the metal sheets are, which you can't swim off of.
Yeah.
So it's directly out there.
Out there.
300 yards out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've heard
no
that.
No interference.
No.
Yeah. Anything we do. Okay.
Yeah. And then he cleaned it.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, yeah.
Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, they had to clean it out.
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because the water was so low.
That said, the less gunk we get into our stormwater, the better it is for all of us, no matter where the water is coming from. So
that's true.
You know, that's
and
just.
And we don't treat the stormwater; it just goes down the drain into the lake.
And Glencoe's case, it does. Yeah. Other inland municipalities treated.
Yeah, I thought it was normally treated, so I
just dump it.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Be careful.
Yeah. Certainly.
Okay.
All right. Do you have a colleague at the village who will also, I know you're going to be popping down there a lot.
Yes.
And this is an unusual project where, you know, there's both these agencies are doing the same thing at the same time.
Yeah. So from the time that it became a joint project with the Phil and Lisa working together, Dave Mao and James T have been the two main points of contact. Mm-hmm. James, Steve, and myself working very closely with CBEL throughout the whole design process, pre-bid walkthrough. I was out of town, wasn't able to attend the bid opening, but David texted me while I was in Mexico and gave me the results, and I was happy to see that. So, we work very closely with the village and the contractor. We'll be working with the contractor and certainly the engineering firm.
Good.
Make sure things go as smoothly as we can get them to go.
Wonderful. Very good. So, if there's nothing more, is there a consensus to advance the IGA with the Village of Glencoe for reimbursement of 50% of the costs associated with bluff and ramp improvements for approval at the March 21st board meeting? Stephanie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Bart?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, you've got your answer
there. All right.
Lisa. Then moving to recreation and facility safety and operational updates. Lisa Shepherd and Bobby Collins will present this information.
Excellent. As you know, we're always looking at safety initiatives at the Park District and at our community centers. In fact, we've added for our comprehensive plan a safety audit of this facility. So you'll see that coming through that for future improvements that we can do this building and carry it on to and the campus, and not just the building, but the campus. But Bobby came to me and Jessica and identified a problem that we're having about people handing back passes, opening doors for people, and as much reminders as we have done with parents and PSAs and why this is a risky behavior, we haven't seen a lot of movement of people stopping that. Problem became a little bit worse when we had to take our front desk personnel down there at the office and put them into classrooms when we have teacher shortages. Rather do that. So this policy was brought forward based on that. Do you have anything else to add with that, Bobby?
Yeah, it just gives us the ability to have consequences if people are reminded and don't follow it, and kind of sets the standard for people to understand that this is approved by the board and that we are taking it seriously and they need to follow the policy. I would say that as we go down the road of these improvements, it's like we may have to alter this policy in the future when we make further changes, but we just want to get it established so we can start enforcing it.
Another thing that we're looking at, especially for the early childhood wing, is that we have a lot of people that were issued those passes, and we're trying to limit the amount of people that can go in that facility. So we've already started talking with TJK about them instituting a car line. We currently have one for our 3 and 4 year old preschool. Obviously, we can't do it for our daycare. They come and go at different times, young children. But for our preschools, our half-day preschools, I should say, they have car lines and they get dropped off and teachers walk them and the parents never really enter the building at all. We're starting to have discussion with GJK of doing that also next year. Mm-hmm. We just want to inform you that we're gonna start having these discussions because the parents of the GJK program really like to come and stand in the hallway, sometimes for an hour, and talk. That's their social gathering time. And so that we feel that that might be a little hurdle. And so we're gonna, we may have to come back to the board, err on the side of safety, and maybe provide a room in the community center where they can come and chat, but not in that ELC wing. So we just wanted to make you aware that we're starting to broach that discussion. I'm sure when we do our safety audit, that's going to come by. In fact, when we already did a walkthrough with the gentleman who's going to give the audit, just to give him kind of an idea of what we're looking for, he goes, "You have that many people coming in here?" I'm like, "Yes." So it was a concern to him, so I'm sure it'll come through. So we just want to make you aware of that. Anything to add?
It would look to be rolled out in September in the new school year.
Yeah.
Develop an operation plan, a communication plan, and have more discussions with GJK. We're also looking to reduce the number of entrances that people can come through. So right now, members of the community with swipe cards can come through 4 entrances. We want to reduce them down to a maximum of 2, most likely 1. The playground one is we'll have to look at, but we'd like to funnel everybody through the main entrance rather than those kind of satellite doors which don't have anybody kind of attending them.
Yes.
And then also there's a higher likelihood that you can back surf if you're out of one of those doors. So again, it's just we're starting to have those discussions and look at the operational plan. There's a lot that goes into that. But we would like it for staff and contractors only who are authorized to enter those doors, not exit.
Do you think there is any safety issue with people who have previously issued those fobs and never turned them in?
So we deactivate them?
Yeah.
Do you? Okay. We do. So we're also looking at a plan of doing a security deposit, so $50.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I was actually, in my head, I was going to suggest it, and then you all always look at me like I am always thinking, I want to grade out.
No, for that one, we really, they're expensive.
That,
we want them back.
Absolutely, you should do it.
For sure.
A deposit of $50, and then if you lose it, you
have to buy a new one.
You actually
have to buy
a new
one. Oh, Stephanie, you're our test case. Oh, you did too? How much are they? Are they 50?
I had to buy at least 5.
I think they're 50.
Right, but I think that
the Tesla fob.
I don't love
I know that is bad.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, didn't GJK used to have a car line? They never have.
So they took a portion of car line needs pickups that we just started to roll out after spring break at 11:30 because of some of the challenges we've had removing a car line for that back by the skate lot.
Yeah, right.
So the 3s and the 4s we want to institute full car lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I
will tell you, I don't think it's a. I personally don't care how you implement the safest way for our kids to get into the buildings. I just think you need to do it. And so if this is what you think is the safest way, I can assure you that you are more informed about this than I am. So
we are going to get negative feedback. So.
We will.
But that's fine.
That's okay.
And it's 2023. It is very different times. Our job is to protect our kids.
think most people get it.
I think most people get it, and I think if you explain it as a safety issue, people will have a harder time objecting to it.
It's the only reason.
That's the only reason, yeah.
I wouldn't do it overnight. I would say starting on, like, if you're going to do it April 1st, or if you're going to do it May 1st, say starting on May 1st, give them a few weeks to, like,
we probably do September.
Yeah.
So we'll give them the summer to get through that.
Yeah.
And the existing families, the whole graduate.
And start
we'll
out
move
new.
Out and the newer one. Yeah.
Can you can also be a little you could also say, you can go over this with the public safety and say public safety agrees with this as well if you need some backing on it, because I think once people say public safety is behind it as well. It helps you, the board's behind it, you're behind it, whatever you
do. And we're doing that safety audit, so I think all those things together
really
will be part of it.
Yeah,
so.
The industry standard is to reduce the number of people in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think you get negative feedback. And if you do,
great.
We've had it before.
Yep.
And it's okay.
The TJK teachers will probably appreciate it because it's annoying, but there is a compromise. If people don't want to go in the car line, they can park, go in, because they open that other door. Because when we were in TJK, they would funnel all the kids and they would sit in that little hallway, that other entrance to the side here, and all the kids would wait. So that other door from this wing, it's apparently...
The west door? Yeah, we're actually looking at locking that one down, too.
Okay, I was going to say, because if a teacher opens it just at, 9 or 9:05, they can let that group of kids in and then the parents can be in there. Just some parents don't like parking. Like, I don't do parking. I always go on opposite end of the parking and the kids walk. So you're going to have parents who just don't want to do it. They're just trying to think of a compromise. Where they don't go in, but they just enter.
We used to have to wait outside for GJK. We weren't allowed to go in. And this was years ago. We had to wait outside for the kids. Which is crazy, now that I think of it. This is before anybody else was here. Oh my God, I'm the only one that was here at the time. Anyway, including the GJK people who work there now, they didn't remember that. But in any case, so good. Let's move to...
One question.
Yes, Bart.
Do we have fobs and cards now, or we just have fobs?
Pretty much just the...
Yeah, so you can see we're all wearing these.
Okay, and it's a swipe card? Is it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we do have some fobs out there. We're cycling through those and removing those from our inventory and replacing them. So all staff and contractors will have photographs.
Okay.
And we're also looking for people who do get swipes that have lanyards. So you can see we're wearing blue, that's intentional. GJK staff are going to be wearing red. And then we're looking at a different color for parents. So if there ever was an incident, we'll be able to identify who people are in the wing based on the lanyards they're wearing. But again, reducing the number of people in the wing at those specific times is the number one thing we can do to reduce confusion and potential threats and people getting in through badge surfing. But you will start to see these kind of measures rolled out. Again, we keep a lot of it behind the scenes to, you don't need to educate the community on all the safety initiatives you're doing.
Right.
Entity.
Yes.
So to answer your question, we are cycling out the little gray fobs.
The cards, though, maybe the fobs too, that has all the data. So you've got the data. Who came in, what time they came in, and then, but you only swipe in, you don't swipe on.
Correct,
the way
out.
Okay.
And, and the data doesn't do any good if someone gets in, so.
Right.
That's our problem.
If somebody loses their card, then
you turn them off.
And you can do that, instantly.
You can do it remotely. Yep. We've had that with people outside immediately. When we started this, we did a lot of work on this as we found out that GJK parents were passing them on, keeping them and passing them on, so then we instituted canceling into them at the end of the year. So obviously that is not okay. So we've done a lot of work on this. We still have to do it all.
Okay,
so
it's
a small thing to stop that. Yep. So are you
here? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, anything else?
Just that if you, in the report we also added some items we're doing for program deposits and multiple payment options as requested by the board. So immediately Bobby and John and the team jumped into how they could make this a little bit more feasible for parents. We saw the issue also. So we put it on there what we're gonna do. And we're also looking at our upgrading our system next year that will allow us to take EFT directly from the bank account instead of using credit card processing, and make that a probability. So we are moving forward with that.
Will we eventually charge more to use a credit card?
If we can get to this, if we get to the point where our system can do that, we don't feel a bit, we can't really do it now, but eventually, yeah, that
right.
I know a lot of people are moving that. For the monthly.
Oh, it's monthly.
Yeah, not the, probably not the one time, you know, the registration day.
So we do, but I think 3.5 million reoccurring billing, so we can get that moved over.
Oh, yeah. Very significant.
Any questions on that portion of the report?
No. Quick question about, will this require a contractual change with GJK once we implement this, or is this just a building policy?
That's just going to be a building policy. Safety and maintenance are building policies, yeah.
All right, very good. If nothing else, is there a consensus to advancing? The swipe card, the swipe card policy for approval at the March 21st board meeting. Stephanie? Carol?
Yes.
Bart?
Yes.
And Michael?
Yes.
Yes, there you go, Lisa.
Okay. So all those will just be put on the action items and not much discussion next week. This will be fresh in your mind.
Okay, very good. So we will move to the update on the fiscal year 2023-24 budget changes from the first draft to the approval draft. John and with Lisa will present that information.
Just wanted to go over some relatively minor changes in grants and grants that we made to the budget from the first draft to the approval draft. This is really just done in an effort to fine tune the amounts based on additional knowledge that obviously we have a cutoff or up in January for that first draft of the budget. So as some things came a little more clear, such as the enrollment in some of the larger programs, and as some more significant expenses were identified. We just wanted to make sure we incorporated that into the approval draft of the budget. The largest change being adjustments to revenue for some fund and aquatics camps. We also added some related to pickleball and youth art. And we also adjusted the cost of the comprehensive plan to what the proposal from 110% was at an absolute amount of $198,000. So when we factored in all the adjustments across all funds, it was a net decrease of about $20,000. So again, nothing significant, no real changes to the ending fund balance percentage for fiscal 24. That's still around 60%. But just wanted to incorporate those changes. So those updated amounts are in the paper copies, binders that you have on your table this evening. So if you just wanted to leave, if you did have your first draft with you, you could leave them and we will certainly dispose of them accordingly. And if you do not want the approval draft binder in paper form, you can certainly leave them also. And we'll obviously have that in a PDF format bookmarked. So the budget is going to go on public inspection. Be posted for public inspection shortly, which is required to be on public inspection for 30 days before approval, which is set to take place at the April board meeting, April 18th, I believe, is the date of the approval draft budget. And that will be, we'll also post in the newspaper 7 days before to just notify that the real hearing is taken. Any questions on the budget? Process at this point.
So this is the draft that we're going to be reviewing at the board meeting?
Correct. This is the approval draft that April's board meeting will be approving. Largely unchanged to the draft that was discussed on February 7th.
I had a note in my calendar that next week's board meeting was really important. That's not because of the budget.
So the approval draft of the budget is approved at the March 21 meeting.
Yes.
The budget and appropriation ordinance is approved at the April 18th.
Okay.
So this it is approved. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's not much change from what we already discussed.
Very important.
We have a lot of bids to approve too. So
yes, that is a busy.
I had highlighted that it was budget, so I was getting a little confused.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. No, I had to get a babysitter, so.
I'll see if Texas are right.
Pretty soon,
you know,
your oldest be able to babysit for her for theirs.
Pretty soon that'll work.
I'm just trying to work that out.
You're trying
the two of them, so that's good. Okay, very good. Anything else regarding that?
Nope, not as for the budget.
Okay, so. Is there a consensus to advance the fiscal year 2023-24 budget approval draft for approval at the March 21st board meeting? Michael?
Yes.
Okay, Bart?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Stephanie?
Yes.
Yes.
Shaking things up there, I see.
Very good. Is there other business?
I just have a few things. On your table is the Shining Stars NSSRA's banquet that will be held at Pinstripes on April 14th. If anybody would like to go, I will be attending. I believe Bobby's attending this year also. Just let us know and we'll register you. It is a very nice night. And, April 14th, Friday, April 14th. So you just let me know when you check your calendars and I will take care of registering you. Unfortunately, we got word that we did not receive an OSLAD grant. We got some feedback, we'll probably get more. They said it was a really good project. There was a record number, I think 100 agencies applied for it. They do have a point system, and I knew one of the graders, and you don't get points. You lose points if you recently had an OSLAD grant and based on your population. So the competitiveness is, even if that little point taken off, like even 0.5, that could, you know, be really close. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a discussion later when we do capital, or before this is the next cycle opens, which is July, and we did hear it's another big cycle, a lot of money being allocated, whether we want to do that again, so apply again. So we'll talk about that later in coming months for that. We talked about the comprehensive plan, made a few changes based on board feedback, so I'm just waiting to get the final proposal. The amount won't change. We're just going to change some things around. One is to include the beach and water fluctuations because of climate change, and safety will be included in the comprehensive plan now. So it's taking a little bit longer to get started with that. So other than that, that is it. Oh, last thing, I'm sorry, one more. This is your folder. You can take this home with you. This is executive session minutes, so don't lose it. Don't leave in the grocery store or coffee shop. Please read it over. I'll ask that if you to approve these. It's our biannual. Every 6 months we have to go through this process. There's probably more than usual because with COVID it was hard to get through them all. I didn't want to be electronically mailing them. So take a look at those. If you guys don't have any changes, they can be approved in open session next month or next week. If not, we want to talk about any of them, then we have to go into executive session. So please bring these back and we'll then destroy them after that next week. But I wanted to give you time to look through them. And if you want, if you're curious what are on those tapes, you can see those. You just have to come to the office and see those ones before they're destroyed. That's it.
Very good. Okay. We will be entering into executive session this evening. So the board will now enter into and you do the switch after I do this, right?
Yep.
The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act. The board will enter closed session to discuss personnel employee evaluation as mandated by Section 2.06 5 ILCS 120/2 C1. Those present during executive session will include all commissioners. Someone move that?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Let us record the time, and we're going to do a roll call vote.
Sure.
Stephanie Boren?
Yes.
Carol Spain?
Yes.
Bart Schneider?
Yes.
Michael Covey? Lisa Brooks?
All right.
Okay. Okay. I entertain a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
Second.
It moved you and second you. Okay, any discussion? No? I'd like a roll call vote, please. Stephanie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Bart?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Lisa, yes. Motion passes. So I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Oh, jeez, I gotta write this down again. Roll call vote, please. Stephanie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Bart? Yeah, yeah. Okay. Michael? Okay.